Hey moms, it's Laura Olinger. Welcome to the Positively Healthy Mom Podcast. Because there's no manual for the hardest job in the world.
Welcome. Today we have our wonderful guest, a friend of mine, Diana Parra, a transformational coach, certified elite neuroencoding specialist, licensed brain health trainer, certified behavioral consultant, and certified grief educator. So welcome, Diana. Thank you for coming today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Laura. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, yes. And I should mention that Diana is also the founder and CEO of Diana Parra International and author of Leading with a Broken Heart, Finding Gold in Our Darkest Moments. So that title kind of speaks for itself as far as the topic that we're leading off today, which is primarily about grief and loss of a child after a miscarriage. And we'll see where the conversation goes from there. So Diana, can you share a little bit about your background and what led you to become a transformational coach and grief educator?
Sure. So I actually started out my career in mental health. I was a therapist, a master's level therapist. And what led me into the grief education world and coaching, especially coaching women who have experienced some type of loss, is, you know, my own experience of loss. I've experienced 4 miscarriages. I've also experienced loss of health. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at one point, and then that same week, a couple of days later, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. So it's kind of like multiple losses in different areas of my life. So then I was already coaching, and when I had experience of the health challenge, I realized how many of us, especially women, have gone through some type of loss, and we don't really take the time to grieve. I mean, we can grieve the loss of our health, not just the loss of a loved one. And all these little losses or big losses can kind of stack and add up. And it really takes a toll on our identity.
That's something that you don't normally connect, I guess, the dots on. And I'm sure that that's part of your process that you go through with your clients. So what are some common misconceptions about grief, and what do you do to help dispel them in your coaching with your clients?
Yeah. So I think one of them is, you know, my mentor, he always says, you know, we live in a grief illiterate world, right? Which is why he created this program to certify people as grief educators, so that we can go out there and educate people going through grief, to normalize it, to let them know that whatever they're experiencing, whatever they're feeling, it's normal. It's okay. So one of the misconceptions, you know, is like, how long do you grieve for? Like, how long does the process take? You know, how long is too short or too long, right? And really, there is no too long or too short of a period of time to grieve. It's very personal. It's a personal experience. And it depends on the loss. It depends on how that individual experiences that loss. Right. And so a lot of times you see people saying, you'll hear like, well, you know, it's been a year since, you know, your husband passed away. You kind of should be like moving on now, you know. That person may not be ready to move on. They're still grieving. They're still going through that process.
So I guess that would be the question is, you know, at what point are they stuck? You know, if they are in this grief process and it's lasting a significant amount of time, at what point do they need help to then move forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and what I look at is the grief, right? First of all, are they moving through the grieving process? You know, doesn't matter how long, are they moving along? We know when they're stuck, when they're kind of like, they're not moving and it's starting to really have a negative impact on their life, on their day to day, you know, and they can't really move out of that into like, okay, I'm let's say I'm going back to work, and yes, I'm still grieving, but I can go and I can go to work and I can do my job and I can come home and I can cook myself a meal and I can take care of, you know, maybe I need to rest more than I typically, you know, need to rest, but we're still kind of engaging in life.
Yeah. So some signs that maybe people should look for, not just in themselves, but maybe their loved ones. If there's a mom on here that's watching or listening and they know of someone who's going through grief, maybe. So the things that you're kind of highlighting are they going through the stages of grief? And I know that that's not a linear process, that it's kind of, you know, all over the map. And maybe you could speak to that, but then also, you know, how much is that affecting them being able to still, you know, there's probably a period of time where they are just going to be shut down and not engaging in life. But then I think what you're saying, and to correct me if I'm wrong, is that maybe slowly over time they could be able to re-engage and just operate in a functional sense in their life, whether it's being able to go to the grocery store, finally being able to cook a meal, or being able to have a conversation, or speaking with a friend, or going back to work. And I know, from my personal experience on grief, which I'll get to more later, that those kind of functional things can be incredibly difficult, and they should not be taken for granted or taken lightly as that being a challenge. So going back to the first part of my question is, you know, going through that kind of loopy process, what does that look like when you are coaching a client?
So it really depends, you know. What I like to do is kind of assess where they are in that process. And you're right. And I'm happy that you mentioned that. It's not a linear process, right? The stages of grief, we kind of go back and forth and, you know, we jump from one to the next. And that's just the process. You know, we can go from denial to depression, to bargaining, to acceptance, to, you know, and then acceptance, and then go back to, you know, denial, right? Because it's a process. I mean, you've probably experienced the loss of, let's say, a loved one. They're no longer in your life. And so it takes a long, long time to kind of, you know, integrate that loss and be at the point where you can say, okay, my life can go on. I miss the person. I can love them. They're still with me. They're still part of me, but my life can go on now. So it's kind of like, I like to, you know, make that assessment first. I kind of get a picture of where they are. And it also depends on when the loss happened, you know, when that occurred. Mm-hmm. Usually, I wouldn't say that someone is stuck if they're still like in the first 2 years.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where I start to look at, okay, if it's been longer and, you know, longer than 2 years, and now they're coming, they're looking for coaching because they feel like, there's something here that's kind of, you know, not allowing me to move forward. Then that's where, yeah, we take it from there.
Yeah. I'm sure there are probably some extreme cases that you've seen. You know, I don't know what that would look like, but for all I know, there's people out there who have been grieving for 20 years, right? And they haven't ever been able to really get out of that. I can't speak to that because this is not the topic that I typically work with. So what is that like? What is like an extreme amount of time, do you think?
I haven't had extreme cases like that, but that can happen. And one of the reasons is, you know, with grief is that grief needs to be witnessed for us to kind of go through that process and heal. And a lot of times, because, you know, we shy away as a society, you know, we shy away from death. The topic of death, the topic of loss, the topic of grief. So most people don't feel like they can talk about it openly. And when they start to share, oftentimes a lot of people are like, oh, okay. And then they want to end that conversation as quickly as they can because it makes them uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. And so they want to just end the conversation. And what ends up happening is the person that's grieving feels like, oh, I can't talk about this. And that starts to create also, you know, they may be dealing with feelings of guilt and shame. And if they can't talk about that with someone, those feelings are just going to amplify.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So I think that's why it's so important. And I'm very passionate about, you know, like educating people about, and myself about that, you know, that whole process, and educating my clients, because I know when I went through the miscarriages for a long time, I mean, it took me years before I actually could talk about, you know, what I went through. Mm-hmm. When I went through the first miscarriage, I told like just probably like three people. Obviously my husband knew, and my immediate family, you know, my parents and my sister and my best friend. And that was it. Mm-hmm. I did not share that with anyone else. And then when I had the other three miscarriages, again, pretty much the same people. Mm-hmm. And that just because I had a lot of guilt and a lot of shame, right? I felt like maybe I did something wrong. Maybe I caused the miscarriages, or maybe, you know, the shame of like not being able to carry, you know, the baby. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe there's something wrong with my body. Mm. And so not being able to share that just amplified those feelings, because again, my grief wasn't really witnessed. I mean, that was my own doing. I'm not, you know, putting it on anybody else. And then also people don't know what to do. I mean, when I had the first miscarriage, obviously I was very, very upset. Mm-hmm. And when I told my parents, they didn't know what to say. And what they did was they said to me, "Oh, honey, don't cry." Right. Mm-hmm. And I understand that that was their, they didn't want to see me in pain. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be okay. But in that moment, I'm like, it's not okay. You know? So it's kind of like, again, educating people that, you know, even little things like that, and they were well-intentioned, you know, they weren't trying to hurt me. But we have to do a better job of really educating ourselves on how to be with someone in grief and how to respond to, you know, to their situation.
Mm-hmm. So what stands out to me about that is, yes, everyone probably has the best intentions, and it's very challenging, I think, for the average person to kind of sit in discomfort, because it is a very uncomfortable feeling. And so they want to get out of that as quickly as possible. And it's really a challenge to just be with someone in their pain. And, you know, what comes to mind for me is just kind of being there, validating the feelings, not trying to change the feelings, not trying to change the situation, not trying to like look on the bright side, it'll get better, or, oh, don't forget to be grateful for what you do have, right? Everybody's trying to do this whole cheer up process. So how could you like educate or advise our audience on how to be with someone who is grieving?
Yeah. And, you know, the best thing that you can do is really sit with them, be with them, like physically be with them. If they're comfortable with that, you don't have to say anything. You don't have to try to fix it. You don't have to try to cheer them up. You can simply say, I'm here for you. And I'll sit here with you and just be with you for as long as you, you know, allow me to be here, you know, and that's it. If they start, you know, a lot of times what happens is they'll start to open up. They'll start to share. Maybe they'll start to talk about memories of their loved one, or maybe they'll talk about how they're feeling. And the best thing that you can do is just, like you said, just listen to them, just hear them, just hold that space for them and not try to do anything, not try to fix it, because this is all normal. And that's what we have to, you know, that we need to change that. Like, we want to fix it because the implication being that there's something wrong. It's a problem. And it's not. It's just the process of, you know, of grieving. So just be with them, sit with them. You can ask, you know, what can I do right now? Can I cook you a meal? Would you like, can I go, you know, get you something that you need? But I'm here for you. That's the most important thing, is for them to know that you're there for them. And that's it. It's just as, you know, simple as that. Yet it's not that simple to do. It's not easy to do.
Yeah. And then my next question relates to something me personally. So today is actually the birthday, or what would have been the birthday, of my nephew who took his own life. And I sent a simple text to my sister and I said, you know, thinking of Adam today, happy, you know, happy birthday to him. And so what do you say to people around? I know what you had a big kind of campaign or social media thing going on before the holidays about how to be with grief during the holidays. Or, but what I'm thinking of is the anniversary or special dates, birthdays, you know, things like that. Like, what is it that's so significant or important about those dates that's like activating that extra grief during those times?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Laura, I want to say, you know, I'm sorry for your loss. I want to acknowledge that. And, you know, the thing with anniversaries and certain dates is they just, of course, they bring up the memory of the person, the person that we've lost. And we start to automatically remember, you know? So for example, we just went through the holidays. So Christmas, you might start remembering like, oh, I remember, you know, 3 Christmases ago, you know, when the person was here and we did X, Y, and Z, right? Mm. And of course, those memories are attached to emotion. Mm-hmm. And so it starts to bring up, you know, a lot of the yearning for what was, you know, and no longer is. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a lot of, you know, during those times, the grief comes up again, you know, and you start thinking about, okay, I miss this person. They're not here. I wish they were here. If they were here, we would be doing this. Maybe the, you know, it would be a different experience. Maybe I wouldn't feel the way I feel right now. And so it's important to acknowledge that it's okay when, you know, certain dates, anniversaries come up, that those feelings might come up as well, you know, and it's just, again, allow that to happen, process those feelings, process the, you know, the fact that they're no longer with you. And instead, like, what can you do to, you know, to remember them, to bring more of the love, to step more into like the love and out of the pain. So that's what I do in my coaching, is to help the you know, my clients move away from the pain and more into like the love. So remember them, not with pain, but remember them with love. You know, so you can, you know, go back to those memories and think, oh yeah, I remember when this happened, and oh, that was so funny when, you know, they did this and that they did that, and then just hold on to that, the love, right? That's what matters. Instead of like remembering them, like, oh my gosh, you know, I wish they were here, and I'm so sad, and you know. We want to move away from the pain and more into the love.
Okay. That's great. That's really good advice for people to just think of and remember and be aware of for their loved ones who, you know, during those special memories or special holidays, anniversaries and everything like that, that that's kind of part of the process, is just that it's activating a memory, it's activating a feeling, and just try to be with them and kind of, I don't know how you could steer, but that's what kind of your job is, to away from the pain and into the love, but maybe people can find a way to, you know, make that happen. So I'm just really curious how, you know, you share as much as you'd like to, but how did you personally heal or recover from your grief? Because, you know, they always say losing a child is the most painful loss that anyone can suffer. And so, you know, 4 of them, that's a lot of loss, and you're doing amazing and you're awesome, and you now have 3 amazing kids, and you know, you obviously did get through the other side of that. So what was that process like for you?
For me, it was a very, very long process. And like I mentioned before, because I didn't really, I didn't allow myself to grieve, first of all. I wanted to move on as quickly as possible. I wanted to just, I went from, you know, the loss into back into my life. And I was just about doing things. Of course, that was a way of distracting myself from the pain. And I'm okay. Didn't talk about it, or very little with my husband. And just time to move on, you know, just go to the next thing, work, life, whatever it is. But deep down inside, I had an enormous amount of pain. And what ended up happening for me is I do think that part of that contributed to me getting sick eventually. Just my body could not hold, you know, all of that pain. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, after the second and the third and the fourth, I would just do the same thing, you know, and not allowing myself to feel the way that, you know, my emotions, my feelings, my pain, my grief, it just really took a toll on me. And I ended up feeling super tired. Like I said, I got sick. I ended up with the, with rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune, you know, disease. And I was miserable. I was miserable. My husband and I adopted our three kids. I'm going to say like a couple. Yeah. It was a couple years after the last, no, after the third miscarriage. Cause the last one I had while I, you know, I already had my kids and it had such a negative, you know, impact on my entire life. I could not really, I wanted to be, you know, a great mom. I wanted to be there for my kids. And of course my kids, they were 3, 5, and 7 when we adopted them. So they had their own trauma that they were going through. And it just became like a really bad situation for everyone because I was stuck in my grief, you know, at that point. And because I wasn't grieving, so I was literally like stuck and I was trying to be a good mom. And I really could not be there for my kids. And I couldn't hold space for their trauma. And I was miserable. And it got so bad that at one point, I didn't want to live anymore. You know, I was in so much pain that I wanted out. And it wasn't until, it was actually when that happened, when I found myself sitting on my bed holding a bottle of pills, and I made a phone call. You know, I decided that I needed help. And I went into bereavement counseling. And that's really kind of what started the whole process of me healing, you know, and allowing myself to grieve and learning that it was okay for me to feel the way that I felt, and that it was okay for me to sometimes just not want to do anything, you know, and that the guilt and the shame were part of the grief. And that was okay too. So I started to understand that that was all those emotions, all those feelings were normal, and that all I needed to do, or what I needed to do, was to allow myself to go through that process. And, you know, it was very challenging because of my situation, because my kids also needed a lot of help, not just from me, but professional help. So there were a lot of layers, you know, at that point. But yeah, but just little by little, I was able to kind of move through that. And really, I had to prioritize myself and my well-being and my healing, because that was the only way for me to then be the best mom that I could be for my kids.
Totally. Yeah. So I can relate on a very different, in a very different context, but I have had my own personal grief where I, many years ago, went through a very slow and painful loss of a marriage. So I ended up having to get divorced. But at the time, I was still fighting for the marriage. I was still working on the marriage. And I was kind of in a state of trauma. And I was not able to be there for my kids in the way that I wanted to be. And I specifically remember my daughter, who was in fifth grade, knocking on my bathroom door. I had kind of like locked myself in the bathroom. And she needed help with her math homework. And I just said, honey, I can't help you right now. I can't help you. I just kept saying it over and over again because she was like, Mom, please, I need help. And it's like the worst feeling ever to feel so helpless as a mom and just as a human. Like I literally couldn't do it. I couldn't open that door and focus. I was just like in a completely dysregulated state. And so, you know, it took me some time to process the guilt that I had about that and the shame that I had about that, because I pride myself in being an amazing mom. But I know that there was a period of time where I wasn't. And so I'm kind of almost have had to go through a grief process of myself in that time period, because I wasn't what I wanted. And so that was its own, you know, loss on top of loss that I was already dealing with. Does that like resonate with you? I see a lot of nodding.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I absolutely, like, the guilt is just, you know, it's unbearable because you want to be there for your kids, but you just really, you can't. And, you know, it's really about understanding and giving ourselves some grace and understanding that we did the best that we could at that, you know, at that time, in that moment. We couldn't give anymore because we didn't have any more to give, you know? And I think that's, and I tell my clients that because I do sometimes hear, you know, similar stories. And I tell them, like, you did the best that you could. And, you know, you now have to celebrate yourself and understand that you are now a completely different person. You moved through that. And so now you have more to give because you have taken care of yourself. You have invested in your healing. And in a way, I see that as like, how, like, what a beautiful gift to give your children, for them to witness you, you know, your mom, their mom taking care of herself and getting herself out of, you know, like a situation like that, feeling stuck or a very disempowering state, and getting herself out of that. Because by them watching that and witnessing that, they're learning, you know, that they too can do that if they ever need to, you know, instead of watching their mom like completely fall apart and just not get out of that situation. I mean, that's a completely different picture.
I'm going to pause my conversation with Diana Pera. If you'd like to hear more, listen to my next episode. Thank you for listening to the Positively Healthy Mom podcast, because there's no manual for the hardest job in the world. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends.